I would like to thank the organizers of today's event for inviting me. And as Ramya was mentioning, I will talk about some first passage times for Brownian motion. In particular, I will try to present a brief overview of the standard setting for the first passage times, the resulting problems, the questions that you can ask, as well as some of the past, current, and potential applications of these quantities. So today's talk is as follows. After a brief introduction, I will present these three problems that arise from the first passage time setting, and I will present them in the order in which they first appear in the literature, starting with the first problem, the oldest problem first. And this is the most recent problem. And if I have I hope to have a few minutes to talk a little bit about the mortality model, which is an application of this randomized problem. And I'll have a few words in conclusion. Okay, so this picture entirely captures the first passage time setting. You just have three ingredients, three objects here. A stochastic process, which I will assume it's just a standard Brownian motion. It doesn't have to be. And we also have a deterministic function of time, which we call the boundary function, and we define a stopping time as the first time the Brownian motion hits that that boundary. This stopping time is referred to as the first passage time of the Brownian motion to that boundary. And this is a natural setting for many real-world problems and applications. Essentially, any time till event can be modeled or could be modeled as a first passage time, or in this within this setting. So based on these three objects, essentially, what type of problems can we formulate? Well, if we take any two of these objects as given, and we try to find something about the third object, there's already that's essentially how we formulate the classical problems. So the first passage time problem, or the forward problem, takes the boundary and the process as inputs and looks for the distribution of the stopping time. The inverse problem takes a distribution and looks for a boundary such that the first time your given process hits that boundary has that desired distribution. So the forward problem, that's actually referred to as the inverse first passage time problem, or just the inverse problem. The forward problem is much older. It dates back to the work of Kolmogorov and Paul Levy. The inverse problem is more recent, about 30 years old, and much more difficult, as most inverse problems are. So I will start with discussing first for the forward problem, just a little review, and we'll look at some applications in a minute. So when it comes to analytical results, in the sense that can you find, given the boundary, can you find distribution of the stopping time? Can you find the density, and or CDF, or Laplace transform, or Fourier transform, or any unique type transforms? The answer is no, not in closed form, not analytically. Essentially, all analytical results are confined to the linear boundary, square root boundary, and the quadratic boundaries. And there's also another construction done by Lurch in 1986 for a class of boundaries for which there is a semi-analytical result, I would say, not purely in closed form. The most famous example is when the boundary is linear. And this is the best known example. And in that case, it turns out that the density or distribution of the stopping time is that of inverse Gaussian distribution. And this is the most compact result in the setting of first passage time problems, and probably and one of the very, very few analytical results. The moment you move away from linear boundaries or away from a Brownian motion, you will not get anything that nice. So, the interesting questions are what happens to the boundary, what happens to the stopping time and its distribution when the boundary is non-linear function. Well, there's many other areas or branches and questions to ask. So research has gone into areas such as the asymptotic behavior of the distribution. In other words, what happens to the density of the CDF as time grows to infinity. This is also related to whether the stopping time is almost surely finite or not. Is there mass at infinity or not? The small time behavior is another category of research papers. That's an important area because there are many numerical algorithms which take, in the first step, the first as a starting point, they take an approximation for the distribution near zero. So knowing the behavior of the distribution near zero and its limit at zero is very important. It's also important that if the boundary and your process start exactly at the same point, if the boundary does not move away fast enough, process will hit it instantaneously and with a very high probability. In fact, in the case of Brownian motion, in terms of the process either hits it with probability 1 or with probability 0. It's either 1 or 0 event. So that's also, I've also put this in this category of papers. And there's a number of probabilistic approaches. There's a sort of different flavor. For example, in our work with Alex and Sebastian, we looked at some applications of certain martingales to formulate integral equations, the solutions to which is the distribution of the first passage time. But certainly the biggest group is the group of numerical methods. So these are essentially have been exhausted. As you can see from the dates, most of the work was really in the 70s, spreading a bit into the 80s. By the 90s, there's no new idea coming in on the numerical side. So there's very fast ways and algorithms to find the distribution of the stopping time given a boundary function. And there's another class of research papers which deals with eigenfunction expansion of the distribution. So this is just a brief overview of there's a very, very vast amount of publications related to first passage time. It's essentially an 80-year-old problem, which is still outstanding. And many people have tried to dig at it. There's many, many papers and names that I've left out. But this is certainly a good starting point for anybody interested in the topic. What about its applications of the forward problem? Well, applications vary. There's many, many areas ranging from biology, astrophysics, certainly statistics and finance. Perhaps the biggest propeller of this of interest in the first passage time was its relation to the Kolmogorov-Smirnov statistic, and particularly to its asymptotic distribution, which is related to the distribution of a Brownian bridge. And Brownian bridge is just a conditioned Brownian motion, conditioned on its endpoint over a certain interval that you take. Also, there is a connection to sequential testing. So these topics can be found in here, for example, discussed in Sigmund 86. Sequential testing is essentially performed until you either reject a hypothesis or until you reach certain power. So at each stage, if you do not reject, you increase your sample. You get additional sample estimates. And you continue doing so until whichever happens first, either reject or reach certain power of the test. In finance, one of its many applications is in pricing barrier options, and this is what I would like to spend a few minutes on. A particular example of a barrier option is something called down and out contract. These are all contracts, financial contracts. So this contract pays an amount Z at a delivery time T, provided that certain underlying price, stock price, does not hit given barrier L. So you have a stock price, you have a given barrier L. As long as the price doesn't hit the barrier during the time 0 to T, you get paid amount Z at time T. So the payoff the payment from this contract is that you will receive this much if you hold the contract at time capital T. So here, this stop in time is the first time the stock price hits the barrier. And I is an indicator function. And what we define as the price of this contract is essentially expected discounted, the expectation of a discounted payment. And in this object here, this exponential term is just a discounting factor. So you can see that when Z is just a constant, this expectation is proportional to the survival probability of the stopping time. Normally, however, this Z here is actually a function of the price itself at time capital T. So Z and indicator function are dependent quantities. But still, we can actually compute this in closed form, provided that the stock price has independent increments and you know distribution of the stopping time, the first passage time tau. So if you do know these two things, then you can still compute this expectation. At least provided whenever the interest rate R is constant. So this discounting term is just a constant. So that's one example of usage or application of first passage times to pricing theory and quantitative finance. So I would like to get on to the inverse problem and just look at a few historical developments there. This problem was formulated in 1976 by Shiryaev, and essentially at the time he asked the question of finding a stopping time for a Brownian motion such that its distribution is exponential. So there are two early papers which actually answer that question. These two papers by Lovell, Dudley, and Gutmann, they found stopping times with exponential distribution, but those stopping times were not first passage times. In other words, there wasn't it was still a first entry times, but not or first exit times, but not out of intervals, but rather some Borel sets, which are time dependent. In other words, there is no continuous boundary which separates exit and the two states. It was not until 2006 that the question of existence and uniqueness of this stopping time and the corresponding boundary was answered. This is a paper by Chadam and David Saunders and some of their PhD students. And this problem is actually much more difficult than the forward problem. Here you're dealing with some non-linear equations, essentially. And it's not surprising that majority of the work that exists on the topic is on numerical methods. So numerical methods range from solving numerically a PDE formulation of the problem or integral equations, or even using Monte Carlo in discrete time. This was the work by Isco and Kranin in 2002. And this inverse problem is also popular in credit risk models. So it gained a lot of popularity. And essentially, this problem gained renewed interest because of the development in finance in the last 10, 15 years. It was somewhat forgotten until people realized that they can use this in modeling credit risk. So let's spend a couple of minutes here on application to credit risk. So one of the main components in the credit risk is a default event of some company, and it's time, a time of default. So as I said earlier, any time event can be or could be modeled as a first passage time, and this is exactly what we're doing here. We're taking some process which represents the creditworthiness of the company, you know, its ability to pay its obligations whenever they're due, and whenever this process hits certain barrier, you define that as a time of default. So default for a company does not have to be bankruptcy. It can be just simply the company does not pay its bondholders, whatever they do, or some other failure to pay its obligations, some financial obligations or debt. So we also need a distribution as an input into the inverse problem. And there is some market information or market data which provides some information about the probability of default at different times. And this market data is, for example, corporate bonds, as well as government bonds. So corporate bonds are more risky than the government bonds because they carry this risk of default, where the government bond does not. That's because the government can always print money in its own currency and pay its debtors. Well, the company cannot do so. So corporate bonds, the prices are lower than government bonds, which are considered to be riskless. And if you assume that this extra risk from corporate bonds is purely due to default, the event of default, that's not really the case. So there's other types of risk, such as liquidity on the market. But if you assume that this type of risk is purely due to probability of event of default, if conditional on no default, the corporate bond should be worth exactly the same as the government bond. And if you, in addition, you assume that you get nothing if there is default, then you get exactly this relation. So conditional on no default, C is just the corporate bond is equal to the government bond. And zero otherwise. So the idea here is you take a time T for which there's market data. In other words, there's some bond prices with that maturity. And you take the ratio of the two bond prices and you get survival probability. So if there's a lot of data, you can build at least for a few points, you can find the market implied probability of default. Of course, you need a whole curve, so you need to fit some distribution to these market implied probabilities. Something smooth with a continuous density, in fact. And once you have this distribution, then if you can solve the index problem, you get a boundary, which this boundary would represent would be actually a default boundary. If you know the process, this Curry-Wittenness process, you know its distance to the boundary, then you know how far or close the company is to defaulting under this scenario. And this information can be used to, for example, this boundary that we get out of this exercise can be used to price other financial securities which depend on this event of default of the company. So this is one application. Another application is of the inverse problem. Actually, this is an application of both. It's a hybrid application of both inverse and forward problems. It's something called economic capital. So banks recently been encouraged to compute this dollar amount called economic capital, and that economic capital is supposed to cover any potential losses over a given year. So it's an annual measure of loss. And that's with certain confidence level. So if you take some equity process or a capital process, and you look at it over the year period, this is the maximum loss, for example, for this sample path that you experienced over the year. And the economic capital is supposed to be such that it's at least this much with certain probability. So in other words, if you define this distance here as the loss L, and we define the probability of hitting a certain loss exceeding a certain level X, that's the same as the capital, this process dropping below this line here, which is exactly C0 minus X up to time 1. So define this quantity as a function of X. The economic capital really is just a solution of Fx equals alpha, where alpha is some confidence level. Normally, alpha is 1% or even 0.1%. So in other words, you don't really want to exceed that loss more than, say, 1 in 100 times or 1 in 1,000 times. They want to be pretty sure that this capital will cover the vast majority of possible outcomes for the loss. That's another application so here actually this is a hybrid in the sense that you assume a boundary, but you do not assume its level. So this X is allowed to range, it's an argument, but you also assume something about the distribution of the stopping time, and that is that at time 1, it's equal exactly to alpha. So you take these and you combine them, and you will get a unique solution, provided that your economic capital, this process is well behaved. Okay, and the third and last problem that I would like to discuss today is something called randomized first passage time problem. So if you remember the classical setting, you had three ingredients. Now we're adding one more. So you have four objects, and The fourth object being added is this extra source of randomness, which we assume to be independent of the Brownian path. And now we have potentially an extra degree of freedom. We can assume as given not just the boundary, but also it's the distribution, the unconditional distribution of this stopping time. So here, this extra source of randomness can be thought of as the random starting point of your Brownian motion. Before, the Brownian motion started at zero. Now it starts something at some level greater than zero, something random. In other words, it's a random shift of your Brownian path. And again, the question is, can we find such a random variable which matches a given boundary and a given distribution, a conditional distribution? And this problem was formulated in about a couple of years ago by Jackson, Craning, and Zhang. But most of the existing work is in here. So we managed to show some existence and uniqueness of this random variable and even get some analytical results in particular cases. An interesting development that emerged was that this problem is connected to something called Skolopov's embedding problem. Skolopov's embedding problem roughly is the following. You're given a Brownian motion, and you're given a distribution on the whole real line, and you find a stopping time for the Brownian motion such that the stop process, the stop Brownian motion, has that desired distribution. So if you, our stop process is exactly this quantity, and since we are assuming the boundary, the functional form of the boundary, we are assuming also the distribution of stopping time tau. If we can solve the randomized problem, we get distribution of x. So on paper, at least, we should be able to compute this, the distribution of this quantity. Of course, these are highly dependent quantities, but if you can compute the distribution of this and at least look at how large of a class you can replicate by changing the boundary, as well as changing the unconditional distribution of this stopping time, then you can at least connect it to Skolopov's problem. In the case of linear boundary, the interesting thing is that the Laplace transform of the density of x is related to the Laplace transform of density of stopping time tau exactly in this way. And if in addition to just a linear boundary, you also assume that the unconditional distribution f is actually gamma, then you can find distribution of x in closed form. It's not a nice, it's not a pretty object, but it is in analytical form. And this is the result that we explore in this mortality model. So this is an application of this randomized version of the problem. So in this mortality model, we're trying to model death of an individual or cohort. And the idea is to replicate this distribution of the time of death through, in this structural structural way, through a health process, which is a drifted Brownian motion. And its starting position, in other words, the health level of an individual at time 0, is denoted by H0, is unknown random quantity. And we proceed in exactly the same way. There's plenty of data on the time of death of an individual. You can fit a distribution to it. That's the unconditional distribution of the stopping time. And if you can solve the randomized problem, then you get distribution of initial health of an individual. So that would be the implied historical distribution of the health level at time 0. So roughly over time, you can see this process. This is the drift, linear drift downwards. On top of it, you add some diffusion, some which is controlled by this parameter beta, which actually controls the volatility of how much it oscillates around the downward drift. And as I mentioned, in the case when the unconditional distribution is gamma distribution, then we can actually find this health level and its distribution in closed form. And the nice thing is that when you take mixture of gammas, we still can have closed form for the initial health level. And mixture of gammas really can fit any distribution on the positive real line with desired precision if you take a big enough mixture. So this is really the health, the mortality model application. Then there is a question of pricing some insurance contracts which depend on time of death. And Maybe I will not, I think I'm running a bit out of time. I'll not talk about this, but I'd like to say a few words in conclusion. So what can we take out of this talk? Certainly that first passage times and the corresponding problems have a long history, difficult to obtain any analytical results, but they have, in the same time, very wide applicability, especially with the recent development in finance. This has actually really fueled the renewed interest in these quantities in the last 10 to 15 years. And the randomized problem is just another new version that emerged with good potential applications, and it's just an example of how you can modify the original problems so that they still have some desired application. But actually, in this case, you can just take this as a completely academic exercise. It does not have to have any applications. It was just that when we worked on the randomized problem, we were not motivated by any application. It was just an interesting theoretical exercise that we found later could be applied in modeling mortality. And other things too, but I will stop here.